Open mic at Suki's, a young Gabe Dinger came up to me.
Oh no.
And he said, "Hey, I just want you to know, of the people in your class,
yeah, that sounds like me.
You're my favorite."
Oh,
that was so much nicer than what I was expecting.
Wow. Is this the first time you telling Gabe that you held that memory?
You know what?
I hold on to it.
You know what Ron tells me his first memory? Ron Funches tells me his first, because I saw his first open mic. And apparently I said to him, I was like, "Pretty good, but you'll probably quit."
Jesus.
Because when he said, that's what funny people did. They would start and then quit. Right. And so he has this memory, but that's not like, because I remember seeing him being like, "This guy is amazing. He's going to blow us out of the water." Sure. But he remembers me as being kind of this like, we'll see.
Mm. Well, that was the thing. You were a dick to everybody.
Oh, don't say that.
So when you said that to me, I was like,
wow.
I mean, it kept me going for another week.
Suki's probably wasn't the best place to come to me for a hard time.
So I'll cut to it again. You listen to K-Boo Comic Insights.
Comedy Hour.
Getting ready.
Fifth Monday of the month.
But I think you gentlemen are good people to talk about the difference in LA and Portland, because you kind of seen the comedy scene in both sides. Mm. So we'll just have a roundtable discussion about it, but how are they different? What makes Portland worse, Portland better?
LA comics drive like this. But Portland comics, they drive
ride
a little
bikes.
Bit like ding, ding, ding. They have bike belts. Next question.
I mean, I think the main thing is sheer volume.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, LA is just, it's a big place with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people in varying levels of comedy. You have just as many people who are like, you know, like me, who are like 10-year veterans of their scenes who are moving up to somewhere big. But then you also have some like 21-year-old who was like, "I wanted to do comedy, so now I'm in LA." Mm-hmm.
Or a lot of people who are going out for acting and their agent said it would be good that they try stand-up.
Yep.
Yeah.
yep. Oof. Or a lot of writers that are funny, you know, on the page and want to take a dabble at stand-up, but then once they get up there, they realize, oh, like, yeah, people are immediately critiquing. They wish they can just bring out a Word document to show them how truly funny they are instead of what they're saying right then and there.
Look at my witticisms.
Look at the second act break. This midpoint is hilarious. And then, you know, they kick you out of the Laugh Factory and you can't go back ever again.
Tough.
Shout out to Jamie Masada.
But so in Portland, it's just people, for most part, just really trying to do stand-up, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not at all the shows.
And more people, I would say, doing it for funsies in Portland.
Right. Like, they're LA, there's just, there are stakes built in because, one, it's hard to get on shows because of people who are on TV get the spots before you, which makes sense. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. If I had a comedy show and someone was like, "Hey, here's a guy who just really loves it and is trying his best," or someone who's on TV, I'm going to be like, "Well, if we got room, that guy who loves it can come on." But
Gabe, I love you to death, but I respectfully disagree because it lights a fire under my loins.
You're on TV.
When an actor, regional sports television, regional sports television.
You can't complain
television.
When you're part of the problem.
I can complain. No, there was a time I remember I was writing. It was my first staff gig, and I was writing for a very terrible show on CBS.
It was Kevin Can Wait.
I was in Kevin James's house. He locked me in there and I just wrote his daily dialogue. But there was an actor on the show. I was in the process of trying to get, not passed, but just get in the regular rotation at the Laugh Factory. Yeah. And I got a couple of showcases, but then there was one particular one that I really wanted to get on and I didn't make the cut, but an actor that was on the show that I was there to write lines for, who I knew was not a funny person. He never did stand up. He failed out of UCB and Second City, all the first stage improv stuff. But because he was such a guy, people saw him on TV, that dude was on the showcase.
But like, if that's gonna upset you, like,
Well, that's LA why I moved to St. John's.
Because that's like L.A. It's not about
it's the optics.
It's not about nurturing. You know, go to New York if you want to be a good comic and you want to work on sets. But L.A. is like you're here to get a job.
Right, you're
applying for a job, whether it be, you know, if you want to be a writer, then you better have some wordy jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to be an actor, you better smile a lot and mm-hmm. be pretty on and sell that person that you're trying. You know, like, L.A. is, it's, you're there for a job. Like, I always say, like, I do stand up on the road.
Mm-hmm.
I go to L.A. to go to meetings and audition. And the shows that are out there, like, the audiences are
not that great.
Mediocre. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not.
Yeah, they seem not being great.
Yeah, it's not. If you put your heart into stand-up in L.A., you're going to get hurt.
Your heart's going to get stomped on by a very camera-ready person.
I only know one person that made it out of L.A. for comedy.
One person that made it out of L.A.?
Like, to be big. It's Heather McDonald.
That started in L.A.?
Started in L.A.
There are a few.
There are people now who are getting, like Dave Ross.
Yeah. He just did his Late Late Show.
Yeah, Gordon.
Yeah. Started, Alan Strickland Williams started in L.A.
That always blew my mind when I was in the mic scene in L.A., buddies that I met who were like, they're L.A. guys that started in L.A.
Yeah.
And I was just like, that's brutal. Like, there's so many eyes on you here. People... No matter how funny you get, a buddy of mine told me, he's like, no matter how funny I get, because I started here and I've always been here, people will always remember that one night in that Chinese restaurant where I just ate a fat one.
Right.
And they won't acknowledge that I've gotten funnier. I'm just like, ugh.
See, and I wish, like, my problem in L.A. is I am immediately forgettable. Like, people meet me and they forget. Like, there are a handful of comedians that I have met for the first time six or seven times. It's like Groundhog Day. Like, every time I meet them, I know a little bit more about them, so I could get... And they're like, hey, you're really fun. And then they never remember me again.
And you're like, I know your birthday.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
You're better shape than me. You're allowed to talk first.
No,
it's your show.
Arm wrestle for you.
No. There's that one thing I felt really strong when I was... Like, immediately when I got to L.A. That one thing where you're at a mic, you're at a show, and you see a comic that you know, and you know they know you too. You've seen each other enough. There was always this weird game of like, who is going to acknowledge the other one first? Am I going crazy?
Do I know you?
Right. It was just that whole thing, especially if they were at a quote unquote different level than you. It's just like, you know, hey, I know Shane. We worked together literally last week. And then it's just like we're standing across the patio from each other, and it's just like, ugh, I'm not going to approach him. He should approach me first.
My least favorite are the always know people, like people that you have never met before, but when someone's like, hey, have you met Nick? They're like, oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, we've met before.
Right.
Nick, great quads, Nick?
Yeah, I got him out in the studio tonight.
I thought a girl was doing that to me a couple months ago. She was like, oh, yeah, we've met before. And I go, no, we haven't. And she goes, yeah, you've done my mic like three times. And I was like, oh, I recognize you now!
Hey. Did your hair color change?
I thought you were doing a thing, and it turns out I'm the jerk. All right.
You got a different shirt on, my bad.
And then I went to her mic the next night to just kind of be like, no hard feelings. She put me up dead last. Dead last! I mean, at least I still got on, but it was just kind of like a, yeah, we've never met before.
Now, with Portland, to me, that feels the exact opposite. Like, the scene is small enough to where you know everybody, and you kind of can interact in a different level.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right on that, or am I?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little removed now. Like, looking at like the
I don't
Portland...
care about you guys.
No, but I mean, I'm just amazed that like even at looking at Portland's funniest person this year, like how many people that I'm like, whoa, like it's a whole new scene for me. But you know, even with all the new people, you know, it's still the same like 30 mics and the same 12 shows.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you have no choice but to see these people and hear their thoughts.
What was it like when you were 21 and there was like So, no clubs? Harvey's, I think, was around still?
But they weren't doing a mic at the time.
Right.
When I started. So when I started, shout out to the Mustard Man. Mark the Mustard Man Kegel ran like three open mics in town. He was like the king. Man. Yeah.
That's oh, you don't know the Mustard Man?
The Mustard Man.
His whole shtick is he downs mustard. A bottle of mustard.
What?
He did it on, was it Stupid People Tricks?
Yeah, he did it Leno, and then he did it on Steve Harvey's Big Challenge, and wow. Steve Harvey ripped him apart. He was like, because he went up after these contortionists and these people who like use trampolines to do cool slam dunks, and then Musty came out and drank his mustard. And Steve Harvey goes, "You didn't really think you were going to come out here and win by drinking some mustard. People are flying in the air, twisting into a pretzel, and you drank some mustard." And he's just like,
Shout out the Mustard Man.
But so what he would do, because in those days, it was like 16 people would be everyone on the show. Mm. So if you were a young comic and you got there early, he would give you like 10 minutes up top.
Yeah.
As audiences would come in and promise to give you a 5-minute spot or a 3-minute spot when people were there and actually filled up, which I mean was in hindsight was super helpful because you're getting to work on time, even though it's just comics and dead air, but it was giving you an opportunity to kind of stretch out a little bit.
Sure. Especially in the beginning.
Yeah. And in those days, like, so the year I started, the New York Times did an article, and it said Seattle and Portland were the least funniest cities in the country.
Bro, that's why I don't read, man.
True to this day. True to this day.
That was
true to this day.
It wasn't until, like, Andrew Michon's show, and they had to call the show, "Comedy is Okay."
Wow.
Whoa.
Because people were, you would tell people, like, "Hey, I'm doing a comedy show," and they'd be like, "I don't like comedy."
Right.
Like, they would tell you they don't
It hit you with a rolled-up New York Times ad.
Yeah. Like, and
rub your nose in.
They weren't wrong. Like, no. You know, it was all, like, road comics, and it was, like, really hacky, like...
Who was in your class, man, when you started?
Kyle Harbert.
Yeah, that's...
And that's it.
Yeah. I mean, Ron is probably the only person who started around the same time I did, and he started, like, 2 years after I did. Yeah. So, yeah, it was, like, Kyle Harbert, Richie Stratton. Well, Joe Fontenot, who recently got attacked on stage. I don't know if you can see my air quotes on the radio.
Oh, yeah. I heard about that.
He's a notorious con man, though, so it's like...
Attacked out the blue.
Yeah, like, I believe he got punched. I just don't know if it was on stage.
Probably.
But yeah, I mean, they're
shout out
Richard,
to him.
Richard Bain was in my class.
Yeah,
I mean, pretty much everyone's gone now. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just, and that's why when I said to Ron, you know, like, people just, you know,
quit.
The longer you go, kind of the, you know, and that's when, like, Ian and Sean Jordan, like, that kind of became more my class because... You know, all the Road Dogs, all the Harvey's guys, once Helium opened, it really created a divide. And I was the only person who gave up featuring at Harvey's to get hosting at Helium.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, the reason they did that, when Helium first opened, they sent out a message to all the comics and they said, "Hey, send us a headshot, a resume, or a bio." And two people did it. It was Lonnie Bruin and Dax Jordan. Those are the only people who sent it in. So they were like, "Hey, we'll hire you guys, but you're hosts."
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're going... And Harvey's at the time paid really well for a feature. But, you know, like, am I going to work for Chicago Steve Barkley or Norm MacDonald?
Right.
You know, like, I'll take the pay cut for
who you're working with.
Yeah, for people who actually enjoy comedy.
Did you guys pick it? Like some improv comedy store type stuff? There's no picketing?
Well, I was the only...
I've seen I'm Dying Up Here. I know how the history of comedy works.
Yes. They ended up loosening up their grip. And, I mean, what I feel like they should have done back then is anyone who Helium hosted, they should have featured immediately because Ian and Ron never worked at Harvey's.
Mm.
They were always just Helium. Mm-hmm. So I think Harvey's really missed their chance to... to work together, as opposed to this weird like 1980s, like it's either them or us. Like, to me, at the end of the day, it's about a paycheck in my hometown, mm-hmm. trying to make right. as much money as I can mm-hmm. where I am. It was no loyalty. You know, Helium hadn't opened yet, so I owed nothing to it, and Harvey's had been a job. You know, right. like,
yeah, I'll never understand that loyalty thing. Like, you can work and they at don't Burger do it now. Hill, and you can work at McDonald's. Like,
they don't do that now. And that. No and offense, so,
I've done that.
I don't know if Mary Ray ever told you, so when Helium, all the Heliums, it's like a national chain, mm-hmm. they have Mary Ray Kim opens them up. She's the greatest person. She's so, like, you can't see an emotion on her face.
She's tough.
I love her.
Nice.
She's nice, but...
So after I got banned from Harvey's, I was in this...
Wait, you just can't just gloss over that. After I got thrown out of the windows...
I have to introduce Mary Ray, because... So I'd been banned from Harvey's, but I was in a competition that the final was at Harvey's. Mm. So they had to let me on stage. And so I invited Mary Ray and her husband as my free plus two.
That's hilarious.
And she was like, okay. And so I go up and do my set. I have a really great set, and I go, hey, if you guys enjoyed me, you can see me this weekend opening for Gilbert Gottfried at Helium.
Yikes.
And oh, my gosh.
That went well.
I get off stage. I go to where Mary Ray's sitting. She's gone. Her and her husband are gone. And then when I went up, I ended up coming in like second or third place in the competition. I had a Helium t-shirt Jesus on when I went up. Christ. So, I mean, I really leaned yeah. into it. Uh-huh.
No, you were a nice guy back then.
The floor manager of Harvey's, when I got off stage from across the room, yelled, she goes, Gabe, and I look over and she just gave me the finger. It was
nice.
And Mary Ray told me the next week at the Helium mic, she goes, I thought that was really funny. She did, but I felt so uncomfortable I had to leave.
Wow.
You don't ban me.
We're lucky to have somebody who came into the scene kind of late, later than you anyway, Gabe, and now they're kind of riding the wave to success. Shane,
Steven,
what was...
yeah, what's it? What's that like?
The wave?
Yeah. You surf, right?
It... fills my lungs.
The weight is...
I've never felt so alive, right. feeling so dead. Mm,
the
you
sweet
know,
release.
Knowing that the cold grasp is imminent, but I'm still... I'm clawing my way out. Yeah.
That's good.
The adrenaline surge. My last adrenaline surge.
Would you say the it's wave is swell?
Oh.
No. It's a dark tide.
I'm dying.
Dying up here.
Showtime.
All right, so what we're going to do now is we're going to go into a little bit of audio. Shane, we're going to listen to one of your jokes. We're going to talk about it and understand kind of what you were doing and why you were doing it.
I didn't sign up for this.
So go ahead, hit Shane Recycle if you could, please.
I just celebrated my 1-year wedding anniversary, and thanks for love. I'm surprised my wife said yes when I asked her, because when I met her, I was a young and broke, struggling dude, and I was also a single father, you know. So it was a tough sell. Had a lot of baggage. I felt like a real estate agent trying to push a shitty foreclosed home on someone. You know what I mean? Like, look, I know this isn't what you were looking for, but I'm going to get you a great deal on it, all right? This property here was built in 83, only had one previous owner. She was a bitch. Yeah. If you come this way, this is the kitchen area, oftentimes referred to as the heart of any real home. As you can see, it's been completely ripped out, right? It's kind of left as is, more room for you to fuck around and make it your own. That's nice. That's good. See, it's weird what happened here. See, the last owner moved in and went to town on trying to change everything. You know, tried to turn the house into something that it's not. And then in the middle of the night, just up and moved to a bigger house that understands her. You know? With a more modern Puerto Rican kind of vibe to it. Yeah. Good for her. Good for her. She left a few things behind, a couple tables, a couple chairs. There's a kid in the corner. But I think... It's like they always say, guys, one woman's trash. That's right. It's your new family. That's right. That's right. That joke's about recycling.
All right. So,
first of all, it is not fair that you chose that bit so long ago. That was like...
That's the first mic you ever did at Helium.
Why did you take that one? Wait, that's the first mic?
Because...
That's when you knew you're like, you know what?
To my point that you came into Portland comedy, three years ago?
Sexy. Right.
But I'm saying you came in polished. You came in all right. Your joke was funny. Right. What was it like for you coming in, you know, as juxtaposed to Gabe?
Well, I'm not white. Oh, all right. I'm very nice. Apparently, Gabe was very mean back in the day.
Which is shocking.
I was very nice.
Which it's shocking because my interactions with Gabe from the first time I met him up to now, he's a sweet, sweet man. And he's like, very nice, and
I appreciate him. See the hair gel,
black. Ooh, slick back,
the black hair dye years.
Yeah, I did have black hair.
The dark
hair. He had like spiky hair.
Another reason I don't like that you played that
studded
bit.
Studded belts.
Here's the thing. Here's some context, folks. Steven did a show at Helium a couple months ago, right?
He'll be doing another one.
All right. The premise was like comics. Well, we swap material. And we pretend to do each other's set down to like the mannerisms and all that. And Steven ended up with me.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically, like, anytime I saw him at a mic or a show, like 2 weeks leading up to it, he would walk up to me and do my bit to my face or like try to get me to critique him doing me. And I was just like, I don't like any of this. I don't like it. And he went up and he killed
it. Keep it going. For me, I'm funny as shit.
Yeah.
The nightmare of that kind of show is if like someone doing an impression of you kills harder.
It
than
killed
you.
Harder than
like
my
they ass. Tighten up your jokes in a way that you're like.
And then he didn't even let me know that he was like giving. He added a tag that works out better. I mean, he wouldn't even let me use the tag. I was like, hey, can
that's
I use that
tag?
He's like,
that's
no,
that didn't happen.
That's for white
that
shame.
That didn't happen.
But no, that was my first mic.
Your first mic at Helium.
Wow, I've grown so much as a person. No, I.
That's pretty much how you tell it now.
That's how you do it. That's how I do it. No, there's,
you say
there's a lot.
You say there's a baby in
there's,
the corner.
I say that there's a lot less, and my voice is deeper. No.
much more sexiness coming off the stage.
So sexy. I was aware of Portland, the comedy scene, even when my first year in San Diego.
Yeah.
And, you know, being in a B scene or a C scene in, like, San Diego, in that first year, you know, listening to all the podcasts like you do when you're starting and just taking everything in that is comedy related, I knew about Ron and I knew about Ian and I knew about, you know, just what the Portland scene was doing with like Austin and Chicago. I knew about all that stuff. And then once I got to LA, I met guys like I met Ian down in LA. I met Bane there and Andrew. I met all these Portland guys and I even got to meet, you know, like Amy and Sean and all those folks. So it's like by the time I got here, I came into the scene knowing I'm like, well, I respect this scene. They put out a lot of good people, and because my wife is from here, I've been coming back and forth when I was living in LA, back and forth from Portland, LA, visiting family, and I'd pop into mics. I did one mic at the Boiler Room, and it handed me my whole ass to me, and I was just like, I get it. I'll go back and work. But it's like when I came in, my whole objective was I was like, Helium is the A Club. I'm going to treat it just like I treated, you know, the store down in San Diego when I wanted to get past, the Comedy Store in Hollywood when I was working on trying to get there, or any other spot. I want to show up. I'm not new. I'm not where I want to be, but it's just like I just want to show the people that have now become my peers and friends and stuff that, like, hey, I'm new to the scene. Let me just show you that I can do this, and then we'll become friends after that because I know, like, I wouldn't. Not that I wouldn't. I'm friends with a lot of comics that I don't particularly find funny. None in this room. None in this room.
Yeah, they might be listening.
Names?
Nobody. No comics listening all right. to this.
Oh, yeah. Milan Patel. No, I'm just kidding. I love you. But no, I came in and it was just like, okay, that's the club.
Right.
And I had buddies like Posse and some of the guys that were here that knew me before I moved up. They were like, bro, when you get here, try to get on at Helium. Try to get past. Show up every Tuesday. Write your name on the list. Nick doesn't put people up. He's a, you know, that he thinks are more attracted to him, so he's going to find you threatening.
Very
don't
much
take
so.
Offense to yeah. that.
You're biting my whole vibe.
Yeah, the first 3 or 4 months I was here, I showed up to Helium every Tuesday religiously, and I'd sign up, and even if I didn't get up, I made it a point to just hang and be there and do all that. And then getting up at mics around town, I just wanted to, it was the same thing. Just show the people that are here, other comics that I like, that, hey, I can be funny too. Put me on your shows right. and all that. And now, you know, I'm sitting in a room with Gabe Dinger and Stephen Wilbur. So, you know what? God is good.
Well, what I do love about that joke is, so you have a degree in creative writing.
I don't know why you could bring up old stuff.
I don't know. I'm just, I want the people
to know.
Putting
it to use.
That your style is very, it's very artistic, right? Like that whole recycling bit is you're painting a picture. You know what I mean? You're making this woman who I've never met seem like a whore.
And you never will.
I hope, God willing, I won't.
I've taken care of it. No one will ever meet her. Ever.
That's a confession if I've ever heard one.
All right, we got it on tape.
We got it. The walls just come down. We're in a van.
All three of you guys pull your face mask off.
Did you know Shane made up a family just for a bit?
Commit to the bit, baby. Yeah. Commit to the bit.
But, I mean, your style is so dope and so cool. Do you think your writing degree helps in that? Or how does it form your jokes?
Writerly is a word I heard a lot in a negative way.
I mean it not negative at all.
No, well, I'm saying like as an undergrad and all that stuff, and in grad school, it's like you know, I'd hear from other peers and professors like, you're being too writerly in this little part. Just write what you're saying. Stop trying to flourish it and do this and do that. And I think the first thing I did when I started doing stand up was I was a too writerly. I was a guy, if you were on your phone, it would take me 5 or 6 scrolls of my thumb up, and that's one bit. I'm writing a dissertation for just a joke about, I don't know, the police yelling at me. Like, it was just too much.
Right.
So over time, it's just like, all right, let's get to the point a little bit. Let's get to the point, but still, you know, I want to put my useless degree to use a little bit, so let me, I don't know, make it a little bit of turn of phrase here, poetic, but I honestly don't think that my failed attempt at the higher education really helped me at all with doing stand-up.
Well, when you're writing, can I ask questions?
Yeah, this is wide open.
Hey, you do my whole set. What do you think our masters in creative writing helps us write our material?
When you're talking about writing and it's just a big dense piece of text, are you also putting in your little? Are you putting in like I means and you knows, is that written in there? Are you writing your entire like
now?
Inflection?
No.
But
no,
were
no.
you?
In the beginning, like parentheses, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Points to that. No. That just kind of happened as I just kind of got more, I just started trusting myself a little bit more to get loose.
Because I mean,
stage.
That will add to your word count.
I think in the Portland's Funniest Person finals, it's the word count is no less than 630. You have to do 630 words,
right.
No more than 800 words, yeah. Right, to qualify.
Yeah.
I'm about 758, so we're good to go.
Speaking of words, I'm about to go to one of my favorite bits of all time.
Word.
And you're doing two, you. Shane?
No. You're doing two, everybody.
No. Okay. No.
So let's
Can
go
we
ahead.
Break it up? Can you do somebody
hit
else
this Shane poem, if you would, and we'll all sit back and enjoy it.
I don't like any of this.
This poem is inspired by my time working in McDonald's in Shelby County, Tennessee, from 9th to 12th grade. It's called The Golden Arches is Where My Heart Is. Stop yelling, motherfucker. I can hear you just fine. Of course you need a second. Please, take your time. Time to kill. I kill time by daydreaming about sparks and gas leaks. For weeks, I can see those golden arches crumble right before me. From the top of that white face painted red afro wearing motherfucker to the bottom of my Velcro non-slid kitchen approved sneakers, the streets will flow with molten hot fry grease. And all those who survive my Big Mac attack of terror will know that I am the one who brought down the clown.
Yeah, that's a number 7 large size with a Diet Coke. Will that complete your order? 775, please pull the first window.
You see, the name tag reads Shane, but it should read Pain. pain, like what I feel with every intercom greeting, with every part of my being. Tremendous pain, torturous pain, terrible pain. T-Pain should be my name. Like, I'm in love with McGriddles, got eggs and got cheese and got bacon. How the hell did they make it so tasty? I'm in love with McGriddles. But I digress. Heart beating through my chest as she passes by with her hellos in my eyes. Never knowing her name, she's just parfait and small fries. My, oh my, sweet apple pie, two for a dollar, girl. I would do some nasty shit to make you holler, girl. If she only knew, if she would just dine in instead of drive through, she would see me. I mean, I'm the reason the toilet bowls are clean, the countertops gleam, the shamrock shakes are green. I'm the reason the McRib mix seems to be a gift from the gods. Have you had your break? Have you had your break? Got fired on my break, so from the register I take a break towards my wealth, a break for my health. Welcome to McDonald's. Go fuck yourself.
It's a bit right early.
I want you to go to a poetry open mic so bad and do that earnestly.
I did, dude.
Did you?
I Whoa. Did.
I honestly think if I you did that at a poetry, like, people would be like, whoa,
yeah, this guy.
Put a McDonald's uniform on when you do it. Oh, man.
Once again, I had to hear that and watch Steven just act it all out.
That's hard. That was a hard one.
Did you get through that at the show?
I stumbled a bunch,
yeah,
but
you did.
Like,
so did I.
Well, how dare you?
Well, I remember seeing that for the first time, and 30 comics rushed into the showroom to watch that on an open mic.
Word?
Yeah, I remember people like, oh, this is the one, this is the one. Adam Posse was like grabbing my shirt. Like,
Adam ran in because he knew it was about fast food. He's like, Big Macs.
But I'm saying, for me,
that's not even possible.
Oh, very good possible. Big Macs.
Big Macs. Samoan Big Macs. I don't know.
Peter Lorre.
But for me, that was, I think, the time when you were put on notice in Portland. Like, yo, this dude is legitimate. Check him out.
Oh, okay.
So let's talk about that bit.
Yeah.
I mean, like Steven said, that is wordy.
Yeah.
Very writerly.
Yeah. I wrote that bit moving. It was the first full-on fleshed-out bit that I wrote after moving here. It was the Friday night midnight mic at Funhouse, and you know, I just always treated that mic like, you know, it's so hard to go to those mics where it's just us.
Yeah,
just it's just more of a hang, a last stop for the night, and it's just one of those things where I'm just like, if I'm not gonna just do anything that's brand new to make my buddies actually, you know, stop drinking and talking and pay attention, then I'm just gonna go and crowd work, like we all just riff or talk about whatever. But I remember, it was just, it just came easy. I got super stoned, and I ate. It was when McDonald's was, they probably still do, but they sold like a family pack, $20. You get like chicken nuggets, 3 Big Macs, and all that. And here's the kicker, I don't have enough people in my family to feed with all that shit. But I was just really high, and I brought all that shit home, and my wife woke up in the middle of the night while I was in the living room with this spread, just eating all this stuff. She just gave me a very disapproving look. And she went back to bed, and I wrote it. I was just like, just thinking about writing. I think it'd be funny to write like a slam poem, mm-hmm, or something like that. And I just wrote it about McDonald's, and I let it kind of simmer for about 2 weeks. And I almost forgot about it. And then I went to the midnight mic on Friday, and it was one of the things. I was just sitting there waiting. Somebody said, I'll be up in a couple. And I was like, oh, shit, I wrote this stupid fucking poem. Let me just see if this works. And I went up, and the first thing, like, stop yelling, motherfucker, I said that. And I remember it was out in the it was outside. It was during the summer. Mm. And everyone just kind of stopped and looked at me. I was just like, go on. And I just went and did the rest of it. And I flubbed it up a lot, but then it was just like, I think Posse was the guy who came up to me. He was just like, yo, that is ridiculous. You need to do that more often. But it was just one of those things. I do it every now and then, but it's so long. Like, that's like a 3-minute kind of bit or whatever it is.
236.
Right. Yeah, that would be a closer if you're putting it in a long set.
And that's what it has been. It's been one of those things. If I'm doing a longer set, I'm just like, okay, well, I'll end it with this. But a part of me feels really hack about it.
No.
I don't think it's hack.
I don't. Well, Steven told me the other day that I'm a pretty hack comic.
No, you have one hack bit. You're not a hack comic.
You didn't say that last part.
Yep. Yeah. I've said it several times.
We'll get to your clips. I like that bit, and I did do it at a poetry open mic because I did a comedy show at some wine place, and there were like slam poets, like actual poets there. They're like, we know you're like a comedian or whatever, but we think if you came to our mic, it's good. It's not. You're not making fun of our stuff. And that's what I was like, I don't want to go to your thing and make fun of your craft and your art. They're like, no, man. They're like, it's good.
Right.
And we know that you're a comic. So the host that was there, he's like, we'll let people know. This guy's a comedian, but he did write a joke that kind of sounds like what we do. So, and I went up and they liked it. And it was fine.
I say you go in a full on McDonald's.
Just straight forward.
But don't make fun of slam poetry.
No, not
like,
at all.
Go up and I think it would kill.
But I'm afraid I might do so well, I'll leave stand-up and just get lost in the
You know
world
what? I have a feeling slam poetry won't look you the same way. I just, maybe not. I don't know.
I've always been afraid of that, doing like I don't know how it happened, but I'm terrified that, like, Larry the Cable Guy one time was like, yeah, I'll do this. I'll do this funny goofball bit. And then somebody was like, I love that.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh. So I've always been afraid of like doing like a character or something like that.
He was a straightforward stand-up, right?
He was Dan Whitney, and mm-hmm. Larry the Cable Guy was his closer. There was actually a place, I forget, somewhere in Montana that had one of his Dan Whitney headshots that had he had cable wires
mm-hmm.
like all wrapped around his neck. Like, no, it was totally
it terrifies me that it, like, I like that and I like only that.
Yeah,
keep doing it. I'm
like, and then he really leaned into it.
Same so you could be the Dice. Slam poet comic.
Yeah, Dice did multiple characters.
Yeah, he started off just like a traditional misogynist, and then. And then one day he was like, maybe I'll do like a leather jacket.
I'll put
thing.
On a jacket. Maybe I'll put on a jacket. Yeah.
And by traditional misogynist, you mean just comedian.
Just stand-up comedian. Yeah.
Well, Shane, you got me to a good question or a point.
Why do you still do it? I don't know.
So performing to the back of the room, right? Because you've all been there when you're like, let me get these comedians off.
Whoa, okay. Just because you're the general manager of a club, I don't think that
works. It does happen so like, in the back of the room. That's where it is. That's where the action's at.
But to kind of perform for like my friends and my peers and my colleagues, well, like how do you balance that?
See, and I think that's a real slippery slope, especially mm-hmm. in like LA and stuff, because mm-hmm. the scene is so important. And like for a midnight mic situation where it is mostly comics, like, that is something where you play to the back of the room. But mm-hmm. for me, for like most of the time, like I could care less mm-hmm. what right. other comics, because when I'm on the road, they're not there with me.
True.
When I'm up on stage, they're not up there with me. When I'm writing it, they're not there. It, you know, like I appreciate comics' opinion and, you know, hearing my jokes and being like, oh, hey, you know, you may not notice that you say this. But when I go up there, I'm thinking of the people who are in that audience, me. I would probably go the staff of the club
mm-hmm.
before I would go comedians, because mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, if any of these guys knew better, they wouldn't be here.
No,
you know,
true.
Like,
not at all.
It's we're all guessing. So I think people really get lost in that, like, oh, well, all the comedians have heard my jokes. No, they haven't.
No,
they're thinking of
barely
their set.
Attention.
Yeah, no. They're it's do not get lost in other comedians' opinions of you, because you may have something that's super funny, like a slam poetry thing, and you're like, oh, or a song that mm-hmm. you want, and you're like, oh, I don't want to do it because everyone says it's hack.
Yeah,
it's not hack. It's hard right. to follow.
Right,
and they'll say it's hack because they don't want to say I can't follow that solid bit.
Well, do you think that mindset happens naturally as you kind of progress and kind of build confidence in your own act? Like early on, I think maybe it's easy for us in that first year or two to be like, well, I got to impress the bigger folks.
Totally.
But once you go on, like you said, when you're on the road, you're in the room, it's like, no, man, the crowd.
Yeah, and I think once you can consistently make a crowd laugh, it's like, hey, who cares what you guys, like, you saw that, so whatever you think is arbitrary.
Right.
Unless it is, like, someone who's directly stealing bits.
Right, okay.
And, you know, like, then it's good for a scene to govern itself, but, you know, that's just one of my biggest pet peeves, and so I'm like, well, I got this, like, rap I want to do, but people say it's hacky. It's like, screw them. Do your rap. And make it make me follow it. You know, like make me ride that wave. That makes all of us better.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then, oh, the comics have already heard it. Well, who cares? It's not a perfected bit.
Right.
It's not a finished bit. So.
That just means you have fallen out of love with the bit.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Right.
If you're still in it, like, and then the other comics don't matter. You still want to do it. That just means it's probably not good. if all the comics have heard it and you're like,
if you're bumming on it, do something else. But you don't owe anything to, like, the scene or you know, individual comics. Do you?
Well, hack jokes. Let's talk about them.
All right, play my clip.
I hear it a lot with New York comics, and I like that you say it's not hack, it's that you can't follow it, right? Because New York people, it's all joke. So if someone's up there doing something different, it's a little shake. Like, how the hell do I follow that? But in Portland, do we have kind of like hack things? Like, for me, resting bitch face is like...
Yeah, that was my... Of 2018 especially, I have resting blank face.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, as long as it's fun, but it is, there are, like, topics that are just, you know, like Tinder, you know, there are topics that are overdone. But, again, like, when I think of a hack bit, I think of, like, I guess that's the same. Like, I got a Viagra caught in the back of my throat and my neck's been stiff ever since.
That's a solid bit.
Is that one of yours?
No, really good.
Chicago Steve Barkley. That'll be in memory forever. Another hack joke that I consider hack was this guy. He goes, I went to a cherry stand in a microphone store. Bada bing, bada boom.
That's so dumb.
Oh, wow. It's the best. You told me that a while ago. That's great.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
The club, when they paid him, they showed... I was in the office when they were writing the check, and in the for section, they wrote, I don't know what for.
That makes me think, then, you know that sound in the room where people go, is that what...
The groan?
Yeah.
Or I think, like, music bits, a lot of time people are like, oh, music's hack, or... Anything that's, I think, kind of out of that just, like, standard, like, telling jokes. Although I feel like PowerPoints have really gotten a leeway on it.
Yeah, big recently.
Yeah.
And no one really gives it a hard time. But, like, in my day, like, rapping, beatboxing, and music.
I think anything that, when it ends, the audience, whether they thought it was funny or not, are compelled to clap.
Yeah.
For the effort.
Seem to be
clap bits.
Deemed as hack. Yeah.
Clap right. bits. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Clap bits.
Where, hey, look at all that I memorized.
Right.
That's how I feel when I do that McDonald's bit.
Oh, yeah. That's my bread
lot.
And butter. Wow, you really... Wow, good for you, bud.
But that's also not all you do.
Right,
like,
definitely.
If
that's
all you did, then it's just kind of tired and boring.
Yeah. I do other fast food restaurants.
He's got this Carl's Jr.
Oh, baby. Don't spoil it. Don't spoil it.
This Carl's Jr. metal parody.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of like when people do voices or impressions, right? Like, mm-hmm. There's no creativity to it, because you're like, could you imagine if Clint Eastwood and Denzel Washington were in a car together? And then mm-hmm. you're just doing the voices.
Right.
So if you're doing a song where you're like, hey, I'll do this song and I play well, but there's no funny in it.
And there are fun ways to get it. Like, if you're good at doing impressions, like, there are ways to do stand-up where you're not doing that. You're still setting it up to where you're like, this is this person doing something. But it's not like the just like... And now,
yeah,
you know, and that's where, you know, being creative and and some sort of like actually being funny and not just, oh, you can do Christopher Walken.
Talented right. person. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Well, speaking of talented people, we're going to go to Stephen Wilbur now.
Oh.
First off, it's KBOO 90.7 Comic Insights. Thank you for listening if you are.
Thank you for staying up.
KBOO.
We got a whole
it's 58
hour.
Past the big hour.
So we're going to run.
We're getting the lead out.
Here's a twofer from Stephen Wilbur.
What's up? KBOO Portland 90.7. Thank you for listening. What we're going to run with really quick is Wilbur shitting pants. If we can run that, then we'll talk about it when we get back. Comic Insights, KBOO Portland. Thank you.
Hi. My name is Stephen Wilbur. I'm 33 years old, a Libra, though being under the sign of balance, I can't stay on a surfboard worth a lick, you know? Let's see. I've never had chicken pox. I definitely didn't shit my pants before coming on stage, and I don't really care for the gum, but I love me a good Bazooka Joe comic, you know? I don't know why I said that shitting the pants thing before. It was a joke. It was a joke, so because I'm a comedian, so you come up, you expect jokes. So of course that was going to be a joke. So I don't even know why I'm saying this part, because that's clearly it was. Of course it was a joke. That one. So anyway, you guys, you know how outside of fire stations at the window, they'll have the sign. That's it. Like you can drop off a baby at 8:00. Cause okay, here's the thing. I haven't shit my pants in since I was in the womb. There's no reason. Maybe if I like paid some teen to punch me in the stomach because the pain's the only thing to let me know I'm alive since I don't deserve love, or if I like. I don't know, like ate some old Thai food and then like chased it down with a bunch of bubble gum because I really wanted to find out what the adventures of BJ and Mort were getting into, but I don't want to be wasteful. But other than it's fine. That's gross. Not that gross. Everybody poops out of their butt. Some people do it out the side of their, but that's a whole different thing. But, okay. Yeah, that's so unprofessional. I would not come on stage with the pants full of shit if, like, even if LA's a really hard place and I came back and I just am trying really hard to do comedy because everybody, industry people say my brand of comedy doesn't really track down there so much that when they describe my comedy, they use air quotes. Or like maybe even if I was afraid somebody would be like, when they call my name, somebody's like, yeah, he's taking a big shit right now. Oh, he's too busy taking a shit. Yeah, he's really Jackson Pollocking it up in there.